Good morning. Please get your Bibles out and turn to Genesis. Genesis chapter 32, please. Genesis chapter 32. And we'll begin reading there in just a couple of moments. I know that many of you, based on the stories that I've told before, hold the opinion that I was probably the worst big brother of all time to my younger brother, Michael. And you would be correct in that assumption. I should have never made fun of him when he poured that whole bottle of Bosco all over him in the middle of the kitchen floor. Should have never taken a picture like that and shown it to all of you. I should have never thrown him through a window. That was not my best effort as being a big brother. And I never should have abandoned him in the middle of that crowded hotel lobby and walked right by him and pretended that I didn't even know him when he dropped that jar of Miracle Whip and it exploded and covered him in that white gooey mess. I just wasn't a very good big brother, but you all have to know that Michael was, well, he was high maintenance, really. He was not an easy child. But on occasion, rarely, on occasion, once in a great while, I would actually do something nice for him, something good for him. I remember a family vacation where we went down to South Carolina. We were staying in a cabin on the beach, and the beach was pretty well deserted. And my parents, when we got there, said it would be okay for us to go swimming in the ocean. But the last thing my father said to me, said to all four of us actually, was to watch out for the undertow. Now, the three of us, the three older brothers, Chuck, David, and myself, all had our life-saving certificates. We had taken all those courses to have that life-saving certificate. It was very important to my parents because neither one of them could swim, and they wanted all of us to be very good swimmers. That's not the funny part. So Michael was... He was a good swimmer, but not a great swimmer. He was still kind of young, hadn't taken all the courses that he intended to take. And when you know, I mean, we weren't in the ocean 15 minutes before I hear my mother yelling frantically and pointing over to where Michael was. He got himself caught in a current. And he was scared. You could tell by the look on his face. He was scared. He was trying to swim towards shore frantically, and he was getting kind of tired already. And since I was the closest one to him, I started swimming out toward him. Not close enough that I would get caught in the current, but close enough where he could hear my voice. You see, if you struggle with the current, if you go in and you struggle with this. With that current, and you try to swim from here, and you try to swim in toward shore, well, that current is always going to be stronger than you are, and you're just going to get tired, and you're going to give up, and you're going to lose, because that current can be just so strong, depending on which where you are. And the key to the whole thing, quite frankly, is to swim parallel this way toward the shore. And so I got close to my brother. I was up in this direction. And I started to yell his name and to call him. And he saw me and he, to his credit, stopped swimming. He stopped fighting the current and he was right here. And he started, and he did what I told him to do. He started to swim toward me. But he didn't want to initially because it didn't make a whole lot of sense to him. I was asking him to swim away from where he wanted to go. He wanted to be down here in the beach. I wanted him to swim away from the beach, kind of at an angle, using the current to his advantage so that he can break through this riptide or this undertow and get out here. Once you're out into that open water, you know, then you can use those currents to help you and you can just ride the waves naturally back in to shore. So he listened. He stopped. He listened. He stopped fighting. He stopped the struggle. And for that reason, he was saved. Otherwise, he would have given up. Otherwise, he would have been too tired to go on. And I think this whole idea of struggling, though, is just kind of a part of life, don't you? I mean, we We struggle with other people, we struggle with ourselves, and we struggle with God. We struggle with other people because every relationship is broken by sin. Nothing works perfectly like God had originally intended. We have competition, we have conflicts, we have pride that gets in our way, we have misunderstandings, and we have disappointments. These people let us down. And that causes this struggle, this conflict. And then we struggle with ourselves. And I think all of our outward struggles are somehow rooted in that, at least to some degree. Even though we like to blame everybody else for every single problem, everything that goes wrong in life, we like to point our finger somewhere else and say, it's not my fault, it's their fault. But really, that struggle is that we something we have that goes on inside us. We have our fears. We have our flaws and we have our frailties. We have temptations and insecurities. And we have regrets and resentment and weaknesses. We have all these things that cause us to constantly struggle internally. And ultimately, though, we struggle with God. We struggle with God. And I think that that is at the core of all the other struggles that we have in our life, whether it's with somebody else or whether it is within ourselves. And we struggle with God. We fight against God for basically two reasons. One is we doubt His wisdom. It just doesn't make any sense to swim away from shore. We don't think His way is the right way. We think that I got a better plan. I'm smarter and I can figure it out. And therein lies the second cause of our conflicts with God is we don't want to lose control. We like to hold on to that control, don't we? We want to fix it ourselves. We don't want to relinquish that control. And those two causes cause us to have all kinds of struggles within us. And I think we struggle and we wrestle with God all the time. And quite frankly, though, as opposed to the alternative, I think God would rather that we fight with Him and struggle with Him and wrestle with Him, because the alternative is that we just walk away from Him. And that's just entirely unacceptable. The story of Jacob, though, this whole story of Jacob and his whole life, I think, is one of struggling with God, of constant struggles. He struggled from the very beginning within his mother's womb. He struggled with his brother Esau by grabbing his heel. He struggled with his two wives. He struggled with his 12 sons. He struggled with his in-laws. And he just kept on, these struggles kept on going and going and going. And in Genesis chapter 32, we see Jacob wrestling with God. We see this struggle that he has with God or an angel. But the result of this struggle is deep personal growth within Jacob. He starts running away. He stops running away from God and starts running toward Him. Let's take a look then, if we could, at Genesis chapter 32 and read this account, this account of this great struggle or great wrestling match that Jacob had. Beginning in verse 24 of Genesis chapter 32. And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. And then he said, "Let me go, for the day is broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." And Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." And he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." Yeah, I think this is one of the strangest stories in the Bible. After we read that, we come away with actually more questions than we do answers on the front side of it. Was this an angel that he was wrestling with? Was it just a dream or a vision that Jacob was having that maybe even God was sending to him? Was he wrestling with God himself? Was he wrestling, some would say, the Spirit of God? I read one guy that said it was a river demon, whatever that was? Or was he just wrestling with a man? Jacob seems to think, coming near the end of this story in verse 30, he seems to think that he was wrestling with God, for he says, I have seen God face to face. You know, but then that comes up with another question, whether it was God himself or an angel. We can't comprehend how is it that God or even one of his angels didn't have enough strength to break free of Jacob and to beat him. You know, how is that possible? At any rate, it seems that Jacob knows this man is more than just a man, somehow. And I don't necessarily think this is a bad thing that Jacob was doing, because it seems almost that this is an answer, this whole struggle, this whole scene is God's answer to Jacob's prayer. Look back up in verse 9, if we could. In verse 9, Jacob offers this prayer to God. In verse 9, and Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with their children. But you said, I will surely do you good, and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. This struggle, this wrestling that goes on in this text, I believe is an answer to this prayer. Jacob remembered the promises that God had given him when he fled from Canaan after he stole Esau's birthright, after he stole his brother's blessing from his father. But things just didn't work out the way Jacob had planned, and he was struggling. And I think he needed to be reminded of this, that it was Jehovah that made him those promises. And Jehovah always keeps his promises. And looking at this story in Genesis chapter 32, I think there's 6 points, 6 things that happened to Jacob that might help me, might help you, when you go through those struggles, when you are wrestling with God, when you are fighting Him, and all those struggles that we seem to go through. The first thing I think that we notice is that when we struggle with God, it is a solitary action. Jacob sends his wives, his children, and his possessions across the river, and then he crosses back over, and Jacob was there alone. You know, this kind of wrestling, this kind of fighting doesn't come when things are good, when we're in the company of friends and the company of family. But this kind of struggle comes when we are alone with great moments of doubt. Now, surely we can talk to other people and listen to wise counsel, but in the end, our faith must come from God, from being alone with God. Our faith cannot come from our family, from this congregation, from other Christians. Our faith, in the end, has to be our faith. And it comes when we get alone, when we are solitary with God. I think of that story of Elijah after he had defeated the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. And he fled because Jezebel was furious. And he fled and he's hiding in this cave. And God finds him and says, why are you here? And God reveals to Elijah that while he can reveal himself in spectacular ways, through winds, through the earthquakes, through fire as he did on Mount Carmel, sometimes he reveals himself to us in a low, soft whisper, a quiet voice. You know, when we're struggling to hold on to what we want, when we are struggling with those trials and things aren't happening the way we think they ought to happen, when God just isn't making any sense to us, that is when we need to get alone with God and get rid of all those distractions and get on our knees and listen to His voice. Sometimes those small, quiet prayers do us the most good. The second thing I think we see from this story of what happened to Jacob is wrestling with God is a priority. Jacob didn't wrestle for just a few minutes. This actually went on all night long. If any of you have ever wrestled, you know, and I don't mean that stuff you see on TV, you know, that stuff is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about collegiate wrestling or even high school wrestling. It is the most exhausting sport you can think of. It wears you out. There's a reason why high school wrestling only has three periods of 2 minutes each. When we're wrestling with God, it has to take priority over everything else. It's not something you could take a break from. It's something that is on your mind all the time. You see, God is struggling with us. This whole struggle is happening because God is trying to mold us. He's trying to make us fit for His purposes. He's trying to round off those rough edges. And this takes a lifetime to be conformed to His image. So it is not something that we can take this kind of casual, take it or leave it, I don't care either way kind of attitude. Some of us don't like to wrestle with God because we're too busy with our own lives. We're too busy with the things that we want to do. We don't want to stop and listen to the voice of God because we're too busy pursuing what we want. And I wonder, how much stronger, how much different would our faith be if during those times when we absolutely needed God's blessings, that we needed His directions and we needed His strength, that we spent an entire night wrestling with God. I remember very distinctly when my mother had a stroke. I flew home from Iowa, where Lynn and I were living at the time. And my brothers and I were taking turns each night staying at the hospital in her room with her. And I remember that evening, that whole night, distinctly, because I wrestled with God all night, did not sleep at all. I was asking why. None of this was making any sense to me whatsoever. I was asking why. I was struggling with Him in prayer. I was pleading. I was begging. But strangely enough, even though God didn't answer my prayers the way I wanted Him to answer those prayers, that night wound up being one of the most important relationship-building experiences with God that I have ever had. Somehow, throughout all of that, He was able to draw me closer to Him. But it was a struggle. And it was something that He was trying to mold me and trying to shape me for something different than what I was going through at that time. So there's going to be times when you're afraid and when you're alone and things just aren't what you want them to be. Those small prayers, again, make all the difference in the world. The next thing, the interesting thing about this story, is when we're wrestling with God, it strips me of my leverage. You know, in our relationships, we like to have leverage over someone else. It's something that gives us the feeling that we've got the upper hand, that they need us more than we need them. And this happens in our friendships. We have this kind of leverage mentality in our marriages, in our families, within the church, among other Christians. And we have that kind of mentality with our relationship with God. And while trying to maintain this idea of leverage in any relationship is damaging, in our relationship with God, it is absolutely fatal. And so, God, or the angel, says, "When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him." Have you ever wondered why the hip? Why it was the hip socket that the angel touched, that God touched? It is through those hips that we get all of our leverage, all of the strength. The strongest parts of the body are your hips and your thighs. And they are so powerful that if you can get that leverage, and keep that leverage against your opponent, you can move him out of a good defensive position, and now you are in control. But God touches Jacob's hip and takes away his leverage. You know, when we just get rid of all of our self-preserved advantages, those things that we like to hold on to, then we can fully rely on God and His blessings and His protection and His strength. Jacob was always clever. But his cleverness, his leverage, only made things worse in his relationships throughout his life. After wrestling with God, Jacob no longer had that leverage. He no longer thought it was all up to him. He would now outwardly limp for the rest of his life, as far as we can tell, and would inwardly always rest and lean on that strength of God. And I think it begs the question, are we willing to limp weakly on those advantages that we think we have, on our own abilities, and just rely on the strength of God? Are we willing to do that, to humble ourselves in His sight and let Him exalt us? The next thing that I think we see in this is that wrestling with God requires me to hold on. And this is kind of where this story takes a weird twist. It is, like I said earlier, it's impossible for us to comprehend how God or even an angel is so weak that he can't break free, that he can't control this situation. He says, "Let me go, for the day is broken." And Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." It's almost as if, once his hip is out of joint, Jacob stops wrestling, and now he's just holding on for dear life, and he will refuse to let go. I remember when Connor and Catherine were little, every single night, they wanted to wrestle with me. Every night I'd get home, and they wanted to do this wrestling match. And Catherine, this is a death grip that she's got. There's absolutely no way to get her off of your back once she is on there. Now, clearly she has a bad sense of direction. She wanted to go horseback riding, you know, for her birthday a couple years ago, and you could see why I was a little, you know, apprehensive about that. I thought, well, is she going to ride the horse like this? She handled that pretty well, but I digress. But Connor had this thing where, and I don't see him, I think he's hiding. So he had this thing where he called it head-to-head. It's where both of us would get on all fours, we'd put our foreheads together, and oh, there you are, and we'd put our foreheads together, and we'd start pushing in opposite directions to see who would win. Now, most of the time, like in this case, one of us or both of us would start laughing so hard that neither one of us would win. And it's not that I wasn't stronger than Connor, at least at this age. I'd hate to do it with him today. I have a bad feeling I'm going to be challenged this afternoon to a head-to-head combat thing. But it wasn't that I was stronger than him at this age. I was testing his resolve. I was testing his strength. I was testing how determined was he going to be in this wrestling match. Our focus within this story shouldn't be on God's strength. I think the Bible clearly bears it out that God is all-powerful and all-seeing and all-knowing. God had the strength. Our focus really ought to be on Jacob's determination, His resolve to hold on with all of his might. Wrestling is all about holds. Wrestling is all about getting the best possible grip that you can on your opponent. Therefore, again, by using the hips and the thighs, you can control that situation. The question is, how is your hold on God? Despite the circumstances that you face in life, despite all that is going on, do you have a firm hold on God? We are told constantly to hold fast to Him, to hold fast to His words. Too easily, I think, we give up in our wrestling with God. We're scared of where this might go. We're afraid of what this might lead to. Sometimes it's easier to quit wrestling with God because, quite frankly, of what happens next. You see, when we wrestle with God, our identity changes. And I think we, within this story, we kind of arrive at the crux of why so many of us refuse to wrestle with God. We're determined to hold on to who we think we are. Even though God might have another plan for us and He's got something entirely different in His mind, but in Jacob's case, his name changes. And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob. Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Remember back in Genesis chapter 27 when Jacob had stolen his father's blessing away from Esau. Remember that? Isaac asked the same question. He said, "What is your name?" He asked, "Who are you?" And Jacob lied. He said, "My name is Esau." Here, he tells the truth. He says, "My name is Jacob." The name Jacob is one that grabs at the heel, a supplanter, a deceiver, a trickster. And it's not that God didn't know who he was. God knew exactly who Jacob was. It's just that God had been waiting 40 years to hear these words coming out of Jacob's mouth. What Jacob was saying, "I am Jacob. I am the supplanter. I am the heel grabber. I am the one that would cheat and lie in order to get ahead of this world. I was willing to manipulate any situation in order to grab your blessing, even though you've already promised that you would deliver all those blessings to me. I have been guilty of striving with you and fighting with you my whole life. I want your will in my life always, but I wanted your will my way." That is who I am. That is what Jacob was saying. He was having a confession with God. When we wrestle with God, it changes how we view ourselves. It changes our purpose. It changes our identity. When we begin to understand and to see ourselves as God sees us. God said, "That's who you were. You used to be that kind of guy, that kind of Jacob, that lying, deceiving, tricking kind of guy. But no more. Now, your name will be called Israel." And the name Israel simply means, literally, God fights. One who wrestles with God and prevails. It means, what this name is implying is, I'm going to trust you from now on. I'm going to do what you say, and I will never, ever let you go. God is saying, up until now, you've been fighting against me. But from now on, I am going to be fighting for you, and I will take up your struggles. I will no longer rebel against you. I will give up all of those lies and all that cheating, because now God could fully bless Jacob and change his name to Israel. Jacob finally realizes the importance of having God's blessing. And he needed that blessing. The God of his fathers now became his God. So are we so tied up in who we think we are that we can't become the person that God wants us to be? We need to be the men and the women that God designed and allow him to mold us so that we can be better fit for his purposes. And finally, the last thing that happens when we wrestle with God is that my view of God changes. And Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why do you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." You know, sometimes it's easier to hold on to a pretend God, a God that we made up, as opposed to worshiping the real God. Too many people have made up their own little pretend God, a God that fits within their paradigm, a God they've made this little box and said, okay, so long as God fits in this little box and He stays in this little box, well, then He and I can have a relationship. But that's not the way the real God works. You see, this fake God, this pretend God that people make up is one of all love. The real God is love, but He's also all about justice and the glory that is due His name. A fake God, a pretend God, is all about my own personal liberty to do what I want to do. The real God sets you free through His law of liberty. That is what the real God is. He wants us to conform to His will and to His law. And that's what the real God is. And the pretend God is one where people say, God just wants me to be happy. That's the only thing that He's concerned about. But the real God, in fact, He wants you to be happy. But He wants you to be holy as He is holy. He wants you to be one of His. For He knows that it is only then that we can truly be happy, when we conform to Him. You know, and this fake God, this pretend God that people make up, says, if it feels good, just go ahead and do it. That's what life is all about. But the real God is the one that allowed feeble, weak human beings to nail Him to the cross so that He can die for our sins. That's the real God. You know, a real God, the one that we worship, doesn't give us the answers that we want sometimes. Sometimes He makes us wrestle with Him in order to get to the final answer, in order to get to be the person that He wants us to be. Yet one thing is certain, that when we come to God and meet Him face to face in these struggles, it changes everything. It changes who you are. It changes where you've been. And it changes how you see God. It changes everyone else around us, and including ourselves. Because after we've come to know God face to face and we allow Him to mold us to how He wants us to be, I become more patient. I become more tolerant. I become more inquisitive of His Word, of His will. I become more appreciative. And I become more amazed every single day that He is mindful of me, and I am thankful for that relationship. That's what happens when we wrestle with God. We change how we view Him. Jacob needed to learn that God keeps His promises. He doubted God. He doubted God's wisdom, and he doubted God's power. And we do the same thing, don't we? We are constantly doubting God. And we want the path to those promises to be as easy and as light as it can possibly be. Jacob doubted those promises, but so do we. Look at this is just four or five different promises. God has promised us that His grace is sufficient for me. So it doesn't matter what kind of thorn in the flesh that I've got. It doesn't matter what kind of trial I've got. My grace is sufficient for you. We've been given that promise. So no matter what it is, I can get through it because God has given me that grace. God has promised me that death has no power over me. Death has no sting within it to harm me. I have been promised that I will have a victory over death. And again, He's promised that He can make everything turn out to be good if I will but love Him. Now again, my definition of good and God's definition of good are sometimes two different things, but that gets back to the trust that we have in God. Do we trust Him enough to say, you know what's good, and I'm going to allow you to take this terrible, awful situation, this persecution, whatever it might be, and I want you to turn that into good because I love you? God has promised us that. God has also promised us that if we search for Him, we will always find Him. When we are alone, when we are anxious, when things just aren't going, and we just don't know which way to turn, God said, look for me. You'll find me. because I'm not very far away. And finally, and I guess ultimately, if you were to start at Genesis 1:1 and just keep a notebook of every single promise that God has ever made to mankind, every single promise that He has made, according to Paul in his second letter to the Corinthians, every promise of God has already been answered yes in Jesus Christ. You've got trials and you want help with those trials? Absolutely, I'll help you in Jesus Christ. You have somebody sick within your family? Yes, I will help you deal with that in my Son. Every promise that He's ever given to us has already been answered yes. But we don't believe that on occasion. We doubt that. We doubt God's wisdom and we doubt His methods. It just doesn't make any sense to us, and so we wrestle with God. And that's okay. Because that wrestling changes everything. Because when we do these things that Jacob went through, when we have that alone time with God, and we make it a priority to get through all of this with His help, we forget our own abilities and we just lean on God and we hold fast to Him and not ever let go. Then I change myself and I change how I view God. All these great things happen because we believe in God and as a result of our wrestling, our fighting, our struggling with God. And see, God wants to change you. God wants to wrestle with you right now. If you have never obeyed Him, if you have never been a child of His and you want all these promises, you want that yes answer. God will do that for you. He will change you and He will give you a new name, and that new name is Christian. A new name, you're a son or daughter of mine. He wants to do that. He wants you to wrestle with Him and so that you will come to believe that His way is always the best way. And sometimes we forget all those blessings, and sometimes we're called a child of His, and then we left that, and we started struggling with God because that hasn't worked out so good. We have more struggles, just like Jacob did, because he doubted God and doubted His methods. So if that applies to you, that you were one of His, you did have your name changed, you did change your identity, but then you went back to your old self, you went back and put on that old man instead of taking him completely off, you went back to that. Well, God can help you put back on that new man too. He can still change your identity, rechange it in this case. Just tremendous blessings. Things that we shouldn't be afraid of. Yes, it could be unsettling because all things are going to change. But it all gets back to the trust that we have in Him, that we believe Him, that He's going to make things right and He's going to make things better. Do you believe Him? Do you believe those promises that Jehovah has given to you? And I hope that you do. But if there's any kind of encouragement that we could give to you, any kind of help that we can give to you to help you in that walk and in that path and in that change of your life, we want to help you do that. We want to help you become a child of His through the waters of baptism, through your repentance and your confession of His name. And we want to help you restore and make Him your God, not just the God of your fathers, but make Him your God. If there's anything at all that we can do, please come while we stand and sing for your encouragement.
Jesus, the loving shepherd, calls thee now to come in the fold of safety, where there is rest and room. Come in the strength of manhood, come in the born of you. Tenderly now He's calling, wanderers come.
What a blessing this service.